The news on the disease front in 2014 might actually be somewhat familiar to the people of 1914. Diseases they saw all the time, like pertussis, whooping cough, are still on the scene. But we thought we had a handle on whooping cough a long time ago. And it's up to epidemic levels now in the state of California. To get an idea of what the situation is and what the possible remedies are, we're talking to Dr. Kathleen Harriman, who's the chief of the Vaccine Preventable Disease Epidemiology section at the California Department of Public Health. Dr. Harriman, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
How sharp is the increase in whooping cough? I mean, how many cases are there extant right now?
Well, in California, we've had close to 3,500 cases reported in 2014, which is more than all of last year. And as many of the listeners might recall, we had an epidemic in 2010 with over 9,000 cases and 10 infant deaths. And tragically, this year, we've had 3 deaths in infants, 2 of whom became ill in 2013 and 1 in 2014. And we just really do not want to have any more infant deaths.
And so obviously this is looking like it could get as big as that 2010 outbreak.
Yes, that's what we're concerned about. It, you know, if it continues as it is, it could be as bad of a year as 2010.
And what, I mean, in the years when, let's say back around 2000 or so, it seems like when vaccines are probably at their peak, what was the general set of numbers you were getting on pertussis cases in a given year?
Well, pertussis has always been cyclical, and by that I mean over a period of 3 to 5 years, there would be a year where there would be a lot of cases, and then the next several years there would be fewer cases, and then there would be a peak again. And the reason that happens is, and it used to happen with all vaccine-preventable diseases before there were vaccines, is that, you know, infants were born to be a susceptible population once their maternal antibody wore off. And it was mostly infants who would become ill with vaccine-preventable diseases before we had vaccines, and pretty much all infants and children would become infected. And so a disease would sweep through the population if enough susceptible people were in the population to sustain a lot of transmission. And then pretty much everybody would get disease and everybody would get immune, and it would take another few years before enough babies were born and enough susceptible people accumulated again to sustain widespread transmission. The disease was never gone, but some years less, some years more. And in non-peak years in California, we typically have less than 1,000 cases a year.
Really? So just in the hundreds, and now we're talking 3,500 already for this year?
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, the last, you know, the years in between 2010 and now had lower numbers, which was exactly what we expected. And it seemed about the right time to have an increase, you know, now that we're 4 years out.
Simply because it is that cyclical, sure.
That's right.
So, Dr. Harriman, are there any areas that are hit any harder than any others? I mean, any particular pockets of California where this is worse?
We do have some counties that are reporting, higher incidence, more cases. Some of that may have to do with just awareness and testing. Once it becomes known that that there's a lot of pertussis, you know, physicians are looking for it and more inclined to test. Some of it may just be that it just kind of got started in that particular area first. And, you know, in 2010 we saw, you know, some counties being hit earlier in the year, some counties being hit later in the year, and so on. So I think that's what we're seeing again this year.
So did you say which counties?
The counties this year, Sonoma's been hit very hard. Marin County is hit hard. I think some of San Diego's been hit pretty hard. So both Northern and Southern California, it just varies really. And like I said, some of it's awareness, and some of it's, you know, true increase in disease.
And so, is there likely to be a difference in the spread of pertussis now that school is out? I mean, the kids aren't around.
Well,
each other in school,
I wish I could say that that would be the case, but it actually doesn't tend to be the case as much as we'd like to wish that were so. I mean, we've had a lot of school outbreaks, really a lot. However, pertussis does circulate pretty well during the summer. In fact, usually the peak incidence occurs in the summer. In 2010, the peak was in July. It's often in late summer. I mean, and that's really because kids, you know, continue to congregate and people continue to congregate all through the year. So we won't have school outbreaks because, you know, school's not in session, but cases will continue.
And so what are the circumstances of the spread of pertussis? First of all, where does it come from? And then we can talk about how it's transmitted from person to person.
Well, it's a human disease. This, you know, Bordetella pertussis, that particular bacteria, only spreads amongst humans. But there's another Bordetella disease that causes kennel cough in dogs. But the one that humans get is in humans. And it's been around since, you know, at least reported in medieval times, as many of our infectious diseases. We've had a vaccine for it since the 1940s. And before we had vaccine, we had, you know, six times as many pertussis cases as even we had in 2010, which to us was a very, very bad year. But before there was vaccine, there were many, many more cases, and, of course, many, many deaths every year. I think about 8,000 deaths a year leading up to, you know, 1940s when we had the vaccine. So we used to have what was called a whole-cell pertussis vaccine. That's what was used from the 1940s, really, until the 1990s. And but parents were noticing that babies were getting reactions to the whole-cell vaccine. And so an acellular vaccine was developed, which was less reactogenic, caused less reactions. But as we've learned since 2010, it doesn't provide the same duration of protection as the old whole-cell vaccine. In other words, the immunity wears off sooner.
Was the concern about the whole cell vaccine that, what were the reactions that were being caused, and was that why the change took place?
That is why. Babies would have, would cry, would have fever, would have local reactions, and parents began being concerned. And so in response to that, they developed this acellular pertussis vaccine that did cause less reactions for sure. And at the time it was licensed, they really thought that the protection would be equivalent to the whole cell vaccine, and that's what was thought for a number of years. We did the switchover in the 1990s, and so by 1997, the acellular vaccines were used for all doses of the infant series. So really any child who's been born, 1997 and since has only received the acellular pertussis vaccine. And what we've found out is that it just doesn't protect people as long. And that's probably one of the main reasons we're seeing this increase in pertussis cases. And there are probably some other reasons also.
Dr. Kathleen Harriman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's with the California Department of Public Health as the chief in the Vaccine Preventable Disease Epidemiology section. You can join us as we talk about pertussis, whooping cough, and its epidemic nature in California right now. 3,500 cases thus far in 2014, which is more than all of 2013. Numbers here at the Exchange, 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.com. So the difference then, it sounds like, is largely due to the vaccine itself. It's not so much that people are not getting vaccines, or is that part of the picture as well?
Yeah, well, it's certainly anything that increases the number of susceptible people in the population kind of adds fuel to the fire. It permits pertussis to circulate more easily. However, with pertussis, unlike measles and some other vaccine-preventable diseases, we don't think that vaccine, people who don't choose not to vaccinate their children, we don't think that's playing a huge role in the resurgence of pertussis. It has a role, but not a huge role.
All right, and the actual vaccine, it used to be the DPT, now it's the Tdap, is that right?
DPT was the old whole cell, diphtheria pertussis tetanus, and now it's DTAP, meaning acellular pertussis. And that's what kids under the age of 7 get, through kindergarten. And then the Tdap, which is really the same, antigens, it's just different, amounts of them, is what we give to people over the age of 6. Usually the first dose is given at age 11 or 12.
And so given the acellular version of the pertussis vaccine, is a more frequent are more frequent boosters recommended?
Well, not at this time. The people at the greatest risk of severe pertussis are infants, very young infants. In fact, infants less than 3 months of age who have not received that first dose of vaccine. They're the ones we're the most worried about. They're the the ones who get very severe pertussis, and that's where we see our fatal cases, in those very, very young infants. So our, you know, it's a miserable disease for anyone to get. It's not fun. It's miserable. People cough for months. It's called the 100-day cough in China. But that said, people beyond infancy, although, you know, they suffer and it's miserable, they don't die from pertussis. So our goal is really to try to protect those very, very young infants. And our main strategy for doing that is to vaccinate pregnant women in the third trimester of pregnancy. And the reason for that is that when the mother is vaccinated, she will make antibodies to pertussis that will be transferred to the fetus and protect that very young infant until it's old enough to get vaccinated, which is, you know, can be as early as 6 weeks and usually is at 8 weeks.
Given the current climate of concern over vaccines generally, with a lot of people opting out or at least attempting to opt out, I imagine you're getting some resistance on the idea of vaccinating pregnant women. I mean, we're talking about people who won't even take a glass of wine during pregnancy.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, we haven't heard a lot about women, you know, objecting to this vaccine. Most women, when they hear about pertussis and know that this can protect their infant, they seem quite accepting of this vaccine. I mean, there always will be some people who will not vaccinate under any circumstances, but for the most part, we've heard that most women are accepting of this vaccine once they understand what pertussis is and that this is really to protect their newborn infant.
The question I began to ask before and didn't quite complete was a question about how it spread then, particularly when we talk about populations of kids together.
Yeah.
In, you know, places like swimming pools and all the other places kids gather in summer, mm-hmm. versus where they gather during the school year.
Yeah. Well, pertussis is very infectious. You know, it's spread when people cough. It's through the aerosols, and, you know, if somebody around you has pertussis and is coughing, you know, you can breathe in the bacteria and become infected if you're susceptible. So it's quite infectious. It's really going to spread anywhere there are people. It doesn't really matter the setting. I mean, indoors is going to spread more easily just because of air circulation and so on, but really, anytime you have groups of people, there's the opportunity for transmission if somebody has it. And, you know, people are infectious for a week or two before they really get that severe cough that is kind of the hallmark of pertussis. And so they may not really realize that they're infectious with pertussis, because the symptoms really start out with just kind of more mild, cold-like symptoms. And people are still transmitting it at that point.
Kathleen Harriman, is the cough at all productive? I mean,
no.
Is the body trying to get something out?
It is not productive at all, and that's something very interesting about pertussis. There's also no fever, which is very unusual for an infectious disease. So the way the cough is, it's a very dry cough, and people get into these coughing jags where they're coughing. They're not catching a breath between coughs. And then at the end, when they've kind of coughed out all their air, they'll take this inhalation, and that's where that whooping sound will come.
It's a real drawing
into the breath.
Exactly,
yeah. But young infants don't have those classic signs, and that's why you know, they sometimes are more slowly diagnosed, because very young infants really may not even have a noticeable cough. What parents usually report with them is that they're kind of gagging, they're gasping. Sometimes their face will turn red or purple. But in between these spells, the infant and really anyone with pertussis will appear perfectly normal. They won't really have any systemic, you know, evidence of disease in between these spells.
And so can pertussis be mistaken or can other things be mistaken for pertussis? I mean, will people think they have whooping cough and they don't?
Yes, that's certainly possible. What we think in adults is that pertussis is very underdiagnosed. You know, people will go in and be told they have bronchitis and so on. And there's been studies done that have shown that, you know, adults with a cough lasting more than 2 weeks, you know, a fairly decent percentage of them, maybe 20%, you know, have pertussis. So we know it's very underdiagnosed in adults, and especially older people, because clinicians just aren't thinking about pertussis and so on. But certainly these adults can transmit it and spread it and be part of the problem. And unlike measles or mumps, rubella, other things that we vaccinate for, even, you know, vaccination, as I mentioned, doesn't provide lifetime immunity, but neither does disease. So even if you've actually had whooping cough, had pertussis, you're not immune for life.
And given its contagion, it sounds like if a member of your family gets it, by the time that you're aware that they have it, you're probably going to get it too.
You're almost guaranteed to get it. However, we do, you know, antibiotics can be given. There's an incubation period, meaning from when you're exposed to when you get symptoms. And if you get antibiotics during that time, that can, you know, short-circuit it and prevent you from getting infected. But when family members, you know, when a child or an adult in a family is diagnosed with pertussis, we typically treat the whole family with antibiotics.
And Dr. Harriman, given the severity of the outbreak in California, as we mentioned, 3,500 cases thus far in 2014, the 2010 outbreak was more than 9,000 cases altogether. Are other states going through this? Is the cycle very similar across the country?
Well, it is, except for that, you know, California had the 2010 epidemic, and other states, you know, thinking of where your listening audience is, like Washington State, you know, their peak year was 2012. So we kind of were one of the first states of kind of this new wave of pertussis. So other states really had a very bad year in 2012. So they might not see a bad year again until, you know, 2015, 2016, something like that. We're kind of a little bit ahead of some of the other states.
All right. We'll keep an eye on the figures. Dr. Kathleen Harriman is the chief of the Vaccine Preventable Disease Epidemiology Section at the California Department of Public Health, talking about whooping cough cases reaching epidemic proportions in California. Dr. Harriman, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.